From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez in the Michigan Talk Network studios all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, lucky-buck.com. Perfect time. This has been a great year for antler growth, man. A little help from Lucky Buck should make it a good fall as long as you're doing everything right. Also, our friends at HHA Sports, the number one name in single pin archery sight technology, as well as MUCC, our friends here protecting our rights to hunt, fish, and trap in the Great Lakes State. And, of course, Costa Sunglasses, see what's out there. I should be fishing right now, but no, I'm recording a show. I guess to complain about not having the opportunity to fish this year much would be bad on my end, because I've fished some great places. We fished Ireland, we fished Florida, and one on Saginaw Bay with some great friends, and one time on the Detroit River with walleye. So there's no complaints in the fact that I actually did get to fish this year. And one of the guys that I got to fish with joins me on the show right now. Dave Chevalier from Crossbow Warriors joins us. He was one of the great guys, along with my girlfriend, Sarah Marie. Rich Goulish was on there. Jenny Olson, our friend Lucky Miller, the captain of the Lucky Dog Charter, and his wife or fiance, not quite clear which one it was. But Kim was with us as well. But Chevy joins us. How are you doing, man?
Hey, thanks for having me on. And you know, and I'm kind of glad you brought up this fishing trip, because I learned every day, you know, you learn a couple things. And I learned two things from you that day. And the first thing was, you have mastered the catch and release. You were so good at it, they weren't even getting to the boat, you were releasing them off the line.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair.
You've taken it to a whole new level.
I did. You know,
and the other thing is like you were mentioning before, those sunglasses. I have never seen sunglasses that just open up your eyes like that. It was just absolutely incredible, and you hooked me on those glasses for the future.
You know, Costa has they came on with us this year, and we got our sunglasses from them. Of course, Michigan Out of Doors TV, Jenny wears Costa sunglasses, and they, I'm not kidding, man, you see colors and you see things that you never thought were possible with just a pair of sunglasses, and the depth and everything. I absolutely love them, and I'm glad you got to experience them there, them as well. Sarah's got some, I've got some, and now we got to get some for Chevy.
Yeah, I tell you, it was depressing, because I just spent a lot of money on some good, what I thought were good sunglasses at the time, and you changed me.
We've ruined you is what we've done.
Yes, you have.
Dave Chevalier, well, Crossbow Warriors, is joining us here on the show. But, man, this is the time that we start thinking about bow season. October is coming up. Here we are, the first week of August, first weekend of August, 2 months away from the opening of bow season here in Michigan. Many people, but not as many as I thought, are moving to crossbows for several reasons. One, they want to enjoy the bow season. The other is for medical reasons. They cannot pull their traditional or their compound bows back anymore, so they're going to a crossbow. And this is the time where people are starting to get out and start looking at crossbows.
Yeah, and you know, I couldn't agree with that more, because the last probably 4 or 5 days, our Facebook and our website has just blown up. It's just simply amazing how, you know, we post stuff all summer long, but it's almost like we're wasting our time, because nobody looks at it until now. All of a sudden, it's like they're coming out of the woodworks.
It is. Why, you know, to me, this is almost last minute. You know, and I get on our listeners and our friends, and I do this in jest, but you know what? November 14th, everybody gets out to sight. Not everybody, but a lot of people get out to sight in. Yep. Because, wow, November 15th, big shock. It's on the calendar for 100 years. You can exactly. Go 1,000 years and know where November 15th falls on ahead of time.
But that's totally true. And you see it. And, you know, it actually seems like it's getting later and later each year in the bow season when people start getting serious about buying bows.
No, and you know, the time is now to find what you want, not what we're pushing, but what you want, what fits you, and you know, what fits your budget, and to find out, is this going to be what you want? Because, you know, once you make that commitment, once you make that $1,000 commitment, it you can't just go do it again unless you have money to burn.
You know, and we're seeing it time and time again, because what's happening is now you're starting to see a lot of these, the magazines and shows and everybody coming out with their top 10 favorite, you know, that they think are the best bows for the year. And what they feel is the best is truly not the best for every individual. And, you know, we stress over and over for people to go into their shops and try to shoot the different bows. And the problem you start to run into now, though, is the dealers only buy so much inventory, and then they try to, replenish throughout the season. But the longer you wait towards the season, or I should say the closer you get to the season, the less selection you're going to have, and you might not find that perfect bow for you.
Exactly. Speaking with Dave Chevalier from CrossbowWarriors.com, one of the things that we preach here on the show is find what is right for you. Some dealers only will carry one line. They will carry one product manufacturer, or maybe two. Okay, they'll have their really top end stuff, and then they'll have a level that I wouldn't put my dog in. Okay, and I'm not calling any names out on this, because everybody varies. But those are the two lines they carry, and they end up selling you what they want to sell you, not what you need.
Exactly, their bills are coming due, and they got to pay off that supplier.
Exactly. So, Dave, when we start to go out looking for a crossbow, say I've never owned a crossbow in my life, what are some of the things we want to look for aside from speed?
Well, a lot of it is how it fits in your shooting position, okay? You want to shoulder it up. What I tell people over and over, shoulder the bow, drop the bow, shoulder the bow. And the faster that you can, not necessarily the faster, but the more comfortable that you can pull that bow up, put it against your shoulder, and then get your eye through that scope with the proper eye relief, that's where you're going to start to feel it. Then you start looking from there. Once you get one that feels good when you're throwing it up on your shoulder, then you start feeling about the balance points. And you're going to notice a significant difference between all the different brands.
And there is going to be a significant, trust me, I've not really delved myself into the crossbow much. Sarah Marie has her own crossbow that she bought from a friend. We bought it brand new from him. She likes it. It fits her. It's comfortable. But since we purchased that, we have found other ones that are a bit more compact, a bit more well-balanced, and seem to shoot very well also.
Exactly. You know, and that's probably the best place you could ever start to look for. Not even just a crossbow, but compound bows or anything, is shoot your friends. You know, let them, you know, take what they have, listen to what they have to say, and then play around with their equipment. You know, because there's no pressure there. You know, so you're going to get the feel for what you need and what you like, and then from there you go to the dealer and start playing around with the different lines.
Exactly, and your budget will mandate what you buy anyway. So that's, you know, and look, let's go back to the gentleman you turned us on to here last year, or maybe even earlier this year. His name was Al. He's out in Wyoming. He borrows a crossbow that his friends bought on the Craigslist, dirt cheap, ends up with the world record crossbow elk.
Exactly. You know, so it's not about having the new, the latest, the greatest. And it's funny, because what we're starting to see is when we go out and we start talking to some of our followers on Facebook and stuff, and when we're out in the field talking to people at the shows, majority of the people that we find that are the happiest with their bows are the people that are spending less than $800 on a bow.
That's a big number even for me. Especially for me. Not even. Trust me, it's a big number regardless. But
exactly.
But the cool thing about crossbows is, Dave Chevalier from Crossbow Warriors is our guest. The cool thing about crossbows is you can buy one bow that everybody in the family can use. There's no draw length issues. There's no, you know, different arrow length issues or grain weight issues. It's one bow. Everybody in the family can use it, right or left-handed, and it's a real easy fix to get everybody out.
That is so true, you know. And then you know, if they get hooked, then you grow from there, and most of them go down the compound lines, or they go into longbows or recurves, and, you know, or some even just truly stay with the crossbows, you know. But it's a great starting point, and it makes it very economical for the average family.
All right, Dave Chevalier, CrossbowWarriors.com is our guest. We're going to return after these. You can find us on our website, WildMichiganRadio.com, on the Michigan Talk Network.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan,
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. The first weekend in August, we are here. Lots of things going on around the state. Things starting to ramp up. Got it, starting to get the hunter safety classes going, and I know the Clinton County Sheriff's Department is offering some hunter safety courses out there. Sheriff Tom Reich doing a great job out there with those kids and people that want to experience the outdoors. And we'll have some information for that on our website here at wildmichiganradio.com. We're being brought to you in part by HHA Sports, the number one name in single-pin archery sight technology. Dave Chevalier, Crossbow Warriors, is our guest here on the show. And you know a little bit about HHA because you've used them, and they have their scope system that you can dial in the range for. And we've got those. We have yet to get it on our crossbow at home. But all things pointing to just the absolute ease of use and no trying to figure out, especially for somebody new, where the yardage lines are on a scope.
No, you know what? It's a great, great tool to have on your crossbow. What it essentially does is it's an adjustable rail system that sits underneath your scope, and it levels the scope up and down. It raises and lowers the scope, adjusting on your yardage. And these things are extremely deadly accurate, and I couldn't be happier with a product like that. I mean, it's funny because I was over at Bowhunter Planet the other day. We were doing some filming there, and they were just like, they've been using the product for 4 years now, and they're still as excited today as they were 4 years ago when they put the tapes on and everything lines up again. It's just amazing product.
It is. And, you know, the thing I'm getting used to is, look, with my old system, I knew what my yardage was. I could look at it. Now it's remembering to dial in.
Yeah.
You kind of have to do that. But, you know, yardage markers are great. Or if you know your area, you know for a fact your area, dialing in is real simple with those things.
Oh, it's super simple. You know, and like you just said, yardage, you know, I do that with all my stands. You know, I'll take and I'll put something out there at 20 yards and then mark a tree at 30 and then 40. And then that's my comfort zone, you know. And so that way I'm not worried about getting a rangefinder out and trying to get things tuned. And so I know exactly where I need to put that scope when that deer's coming in or a bear or whatever.
Absolutely. Dave Chevalier from Crossbow Warriors is our guest. Let's get back, Dave, to finding that crossbow. Look, you know, Field & Stream, I'm just using them as examples, and I'm not pointing bad fingers at them, but, you know, they have their picks for the top 10 crossbows or most innovative, and everybody's trying to make everything go faster, but what people do not realize, this is just like vertical bows. When you see an IBO speed of a bow, they're using the you know, heaviest weight, the lightest grain arrow, and that's what they're measuring those speeds at. Now, with crossbows, I mean, bolts are considerably heavier. Field tips, you know, you're going to be probably using a 125 grain head on your broadhead. So how do those speeds factor in when they, you know, when looking at a crossbow?
They also do the same thing with the crossbows. They're lightening up the arrows. They're lightening up the tips. They're putting 80 grain tips in there, 75 grains, trying to get as much speed as they want because they know that the normal consumer is all about numbers, you know? So realistically, I mean, a lot of the, and I'm not saying every company does it. There's a lot of them that use the average 400, 425 grain combination, you know, to shoot, and then you'll get some good numbers there. But that's just something to keep in the back of your mind. It's a reference point. When you see that on the bows or in the magazines or in the articles, it's more or less a reference point. You know, the combination that you use, you might get faster, you might get slower, but it's going to be in that ballpark.
What is holding the industry back from true speeds?
You know, I don't know that answer, to be honest with you.
It's a tough question to ask.
You know, I think a lot of it goes because everybody wants to have the fastest crossbow. Well, they used to. They used to want to have the fastest crossbow. It was a race for speed. Now they've backed off that and they've gone for compactness. You know, how can we make this more compact, balance better, you know, narrower? You know, those things are starting to come into play now. And the speed has really kind of gone. You've got a different group. We've split off. You've got a speed group, which is far and few between. They're not as common as they used to be or like they are in the compound world. And now it's just everybody realized walking through the woods with these crossbows, they're heavy, they're bulky, they're hard to get up and down your tree stands or wherever you're sitting. So now they're looking for more compact stuff.
Now, let's take into consideration, we're speaking with Dave Chevalier from CrossbowWarriors.com. What about some of the reverse action bows, like the Scorpid crossbow, that it looks like, you know, like a scorpion? It's kind of got its limbs going outward instead of back. The string comes backward and pushes the bolt forward in kind of a reverse manner.
It's actually their funnest heck to shoot. You know, Barnett makes one. 10 Point just acquired the Horton brand last year, and they've come out and they revamped the Horton lineup, and that's a cool looking bow. It shoots great, but yeah, it's just a different feel. It makes it a lot narrower because they get them down to 10.5-12 inches with once they're cocked. You do get a little bit longer draw cycle on them. You get a little bit more kinetic energy on some of the different brands. But, yeah, it's just a different style, you know, just something, you know, trying to create something different, come up with a new niche.
Now, what about ease of use when it comes to the compound crossbow versus the recurve crossbow?
Ease of use, there is an ease of use factor when you have to, say, in Excalibur's big claim is if you have to, you know, replace something in the field, you could easily assemble and disassemble and replace it in the field, where with a compound, you're going to have to go to get a bolt press and, you know, press it back in to get your strings together. The big difference is, though, a lot of people have issues trying to cock a recurve crossbow because it's a lot stiffer. You're pulling back the full bow mm-hmm. versus a compound where you're pulling back the cams, and once the cams roll over, you're starting to get your let off.
Now, my question, too, with the like the Excalibur, you're giving up, you know, actually you're adding a lot of width in that bow because it is so wide. You have to make up for where the cams are on a compound bow, and sometimes that can be kind of difficult inside a blind situation.
It can be very difficult, and when we start talking to people that have in the past they've hit their limbs on trees or inside their blinds, most of them have been the recurve shooters. You know, it's something you have to be a little bit more aware of. But on the other hand, a recurve is a lot lighter on the front end, and it balances a little bit better than some of the models out there for the compounds.
All right, Dave Chevalier, CrossbowWarriors.com. Got about a minute left in this segment. Dave, what are you guys working on right now?
The biggest thing is we're all getting jacked up. We're heading up to Ontario for a bear hunt up at Northern Wilderness Bear Outfitters. And actually, we'll be heading up with one of your buddies, Russ.
Oh, Russ Bartell. That is the most dangerous man on the planet right there. We kid Russ. He's sometimes our driver when we go some of these places like the ATA show. And we let Russ drive because he's had 15 minutes of driver's education at the Bob Bondurant School of Driving. See, and if you ask him about that, he'll probably just laugh. But yeah,
oh, that's funny.
Yeah, oh yeah. So we leave all the driving to Russ in places like Las Vegas or on the way to Indianapolis or someplace like that, just because you know, he's got the confidence for whatever reason.
Exactly. And so we'll be heading up there. We got a bunch of new products we're going to be testing up there. We're going to be filming a bunch of stuff. So, you know, check out our Facebook page or our website. You'll see a lot of new videos coming out from that trip.
All right, Dave Chevalier, CrossbowWarriors.com, brought to you by HHA Sports on Wild Michigan.
Get down in that Georgia clay and Alpine Peaks at the bottom of a real tall cold drink, chilling to some Skinner or some Mohawk.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. So good to have you here on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you by MUCC. Helping defend our rights to hunt, fish, and trap in Michigan. Join them, MUCC.org. A great organization. Very happy to have them on board as a family member of Wild Michigan. If you have not read, Field & Stream magazine is reporting that there is a problem in Holmes County, Ohio. And before we get to our next guest, Mark Esch, I want to read this to you briefly. The state's Division of Wildlife in Ohio is going door-to-door to solve its 19 confirmed cases of CWD in the area, and they can all be traced to a single location, a world-class whitetails of Ohio, a deer hunting preserve and breeding facility, which officials first quarantined last fall. Now, because of the CWD's severity, wildlife officials are now covering ground on foot, hoping to harvest and sample whitetails within a three-mile radius of the preserve to see how far the disease has spread. According to the Daily Record in Ohio, last October, world-class whitetails owner Daniel Yoder disobeyed orders from the Ohio DNR, or the Ohio Department of Agriculture, which oversees deer farming, to isolate his deer as the fatal disease, the state's first case of which in either wild or farm-raised deer seems to have originated at that facility. So far this summer, 500 deer have been euthanized and tested for CWD at Yoder's facility to contain the disease. And as we mentioned on our Facebook post, this is not typical of the really good organizations like Conquest, Sense of Michigan, Conquest 200, the Deer Farm in Davison, Michigan. Okay, look, Doug Roberts, Karen Roberts, they are what I believe to be the epitome of a great facility for farm-raised deer. Places like this one in Ohio, places like the one in Kent County a few years back that had an issue with CWD and then tried to sneak deer out under cover of darkness are giving these facilities a bad name. Okay, so now everybody in Ohio is suffering because of it. Everybody, because of one person and his inability to follow the rules. Again, they should be the ones responsible financially for the burden that is being put on the state because of CWD being found in those deer and his inability to contain his deer. Again, just some news coming out of Ohio. Sorry, Mark Ash, my good friend, taxidermist at Wildlife Reflection Taxidermy. We have seen numbers go down as far as the harvest from last year. This year, we've got two confirmed cases of CWD in Meridian Township. Now they're testing the one deer, the male buck, 2.5 years old, to see if it's genetically linked to the 5.5-year-old doe that was found. Did your numbers, as far as being a taxidermist is concerned, did you see a drop in numbers last year?
Just a little bit. I think that was due to the EHD that was found up here the year before. But yeah, not terribly bad. I do a lot of deer from out of state also. But yeah, definitely we're down. And hopefully not going to be down again because of CWD.
Yeah, no, I mean, EHD last year, of course, was a big issue. I mean, we had, the year before, rather, there was a huge outbreak of it in the Maple River area. Of course, you are based in DeWitt. Right. That whole area, that got hit pretty hard.
It did.
You know, so, I mean, but now, you know, the fear of CWD, hunter retention being an issue, and that's why I guess I ask you the question, being a taxidermist, you know, have you seen kind of an impact thus far?
Yes, yes. And I even talked to people that said they're not sure about even hunting in certain areas because of CWD now, too. So I hope guys don't think that they don't need to hunt just because they've been finding that Meridian Township.
No, I think we really need to hunt and get out and you know, and look, if in the event there are actual more cases out there, they need to be found. Plain and simple.
Right.
But let's talk taxidermy with you. We're in the middle of fishing season right now in Michigan. The steelhead, coho, kings are starting to come in, lake trout are coming in, walleye. Are you seeing even big panfish right now? What is your what are you seeing for fish coming into your taxidermy shop?
Pretty good numbers. Not recently, but you know, a week or two ago and before that, quite a bit of smallmouth bass, bluegill, walleye, some real nice walleye, a couple pike. So pretty good numbers. Some guys are talking, so you know, it's definitely down on the walleye for the Saginaw Bay. I've heard that, but I'm doing pretty good here as far as you know, getting fishing.
Well, good. We've had pretty good years for walleye fishing. Of course, the spring and the fall are usually the times for big walleye, but should we get something in the summertime, give us some instruction as to how to best save our fish to get it to you, the taxidermist.
Sure. The best way to do it, if they can, is to, as soon as possible, to wrap it in like a wet towel, wet rag, and then put it in the trash bag and freeze it. Because what that does, it protects the color, protects the fins, so they don't get broken, and you know, anything can get freezer burn, get dried out. Well, that wet material will basically stop the freezer burn from happening. So it works really good for the taxidermist. They have a nice, moist thing to work with when he gets it. Obviously, if you can't do that, is keep it in water, keep it as cool as possible, or in ice, before you can get it to the freezer. As we all know, you know, fish lose color pretty fast once they're out of the water. So just try to keep them, you know, in water or on ice, and then into the freezer.
You know, color is very important to you as a taxidermist. You know, to try and represent. I mean, you have a basic outline for like bluegill, for bass, for patterning and the like, but to preserve that color when it comes to you, that's important too, because every fish is unique.
It is. I say that every fish has different markings. You could have five bass, they're all a little different, especially trout, things like that too. Even bluegills, they're all a little different shades, a little different markings on the side. Yeah, they all have their uniqueness to it, so you want to see that as much as you possibly can.
Now, speaking with Mark Esch from Wildlife Reflection Taxidermy here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Mark, here's another question I have regarding saving those little details of the fish that you catch that you want to have mounted. Have camera phones really helped much? Have the cameras on, you know, in our phones helped much for representing that species, or for the specimen, rather?
Yes, it does. Yeah, actually, the freshest picture, you know, right out of the water, you can take is the better for the taxidermist. And again, same thing for colors, shades. I just got a bunch of fish in from the UP, and they're a little bit, like smallmouth bass and a couple other fish, and they're a lot darker. They're not the usual bass catch around here. So yes, pictures help a lot. Plus, that way too, you can go off that picture and say, okay, it was this shade compared to a generalized, you know, bass or pike or something like that. So that helps a lot.
No, and I think that's a very good point to bring up too, because as we are fishing, as we are hunting, you want to remember exactly, or at least as close to exact as how it was at that time. You know, to remember that moment, fish especially, because look, like you said, some smallmouth bass are kind of a copper color, some are more of a greenish color, depending on their habitat. And wanting to remember it as it came out of the water is definitely a way to go.
And that's very true. I've done smallmouth bass from the Grand Ledge area up to Torch Lake area. They're so different in color and shades and everything, markings. So yes, pictures make a big difference to get the original, you know, colors and everything back.
All right, Mark Esch is our guest, our good friend here from Wildlife Reflection Taxidermy, joining us on the Michigan Talk Network. Mark, if you don't mind hanging on, I'm sorry I ranted on you in the beginning. I just went off.
That's okay.
But it's a big issue, and it's going to cost a lot of people in Ohio and across the country a lot of money. It's something we really need to watch. So stick around, Mark. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more with you. We're going to talk a little bit about taxidermy, maybe how to prep your waterfowl, maybe how to prep your deer, because we are coming up on that season. Okay? Yep. We are getting there. Speaking with Mark Esch, Wildlife Reflection Taxidermy. This is Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hi, this is Larry Weissen, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
Thank you, Mr. Whitetail. Larry Weissen. Love that guy. I know I say it every time. I'm Duran Martinez. You're listening to Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you by Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there. Get a link to Costa on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can also pick up the podcast absolutely free there as well. And we've got a lot of good stuff coming your way here for the show in the next few weeks as we start ramping up, getting towards bow season. I know here we are August 1st weekend, and we are already thinking about October 1st, getting ready for deer season, bow season in Michigan. Also, waterfowl coming up in September with the early waterfowl, the early teal seasons, Canada goose. And we want people to be prepared, because when you get these trophies, when you're out hunting, you know, probably more than just, meat is going to be on the mind. Sometimes we are lucky enough to score something that we want to preserve forever. And that's what we bring in our taxidermist, our good friend, Mark Esch, Wildlife Reflection Taxidermy. Has been doing it for a long time. He's done, he's done a couple of turkeys for me, a deer, a boar, working on my Michigan elk. And, it's kind of like finding the barber you like. You know, it's like you've got one guy, Mark. You got that one guy you want to go to, and you don't want to make a bunch of different choices. You find the one guy you like that captures what you did, and you just want to stay there. And yep. And that's what we've done, man. And that's why we bring you on the show, because you give us really good information. Now, as we are looking forward to like a waterfowl season, birds are a little bit different to take care of than fish. And when I was out bird hunting with my friend's dad, who's also a taxidermist, he had a stack of nylons with him. I'm like, is there something I don't know? but they're very helpful in protecting the bird's feathers.
They are. The big thing about that is, if you can go head first into a nylon, it brings all those feathers right together, keeps them together. You're not going to break a wing or a foot or the bill in the freezer. And that's the smartest thing you can do, put it something like that, and then put it in a bag and put it in the freezer, because it just helps to, you know, basically what you want, beautiful mount when you get done. So if, as long as you get the taxidermist in good shape, then you're going to be okay.
You know, it really does help to have things in good shape, because as I saw in your studio, there was a gentleman that had an elk that had a broken antler, and you had to fix it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. And how did you do that? That was just, I looked at it, I would have never known.
Yeah, basically what I did is I cast the points off the other side and just reproduce them on the other side. So basically they match real well. I do that quite a bit, whitetails or whatever. And you can reproduce points or antlers exactly how they were on the other side. So they match up height and length and all that stuff too. So that works really nice for everybody. Then you just stain them to the right color and you can't tell.
No, I couldn't tell. I looked at that and I'm like, wow, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, looks nice.
But I want to get back to the birds. Because they have so many pin feathers and the other feathers throughout their body, keeping them safe is a trick. And you know, right. when we went out, tucking their head underneath a wing and then rolling them up carefully was one yep. of the ways we did it also.
Yep, that works good. And also, you know, some guys will even put a piece of paper towel or cotton in the mouth to keep the blood off the feathers, and that helps also.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, the cleaner the bird, the better.
Now, how difficult is it to clean the feathers? Can you clean the feathers, or is it something that's just going to end up staining?
No, you can clean the feathers. Basically, in bird taxidermy, what you do is you obviously measure your bird, but then even once you skin everything, you still have to wash it. The skin, feathers, and all are basically washed real well. They get cleaned, they're rinsed again, and they're washed a couple times, actually. But it gets really grease and oil on them, plus it really fluffs the feathers. And they go into a tumbler. Then they get really nice and fluff and clean and everything. So, yeah, they get washed and clean real well before they're mounted.
Excellent. Do you have a favorite type of bird you like doing?
Probably wood ducks, things like the olive ducks. Yeah, my favorite.
Yeah, I can see that. Now, what's your least favorite? How difficult are turkeys to do?
Very difficult. They are very, because they just, you know, they're very large and they have a lot of fat and a lot of... just a lot of things involved, and they're just very difficult to work on and put together, because there's so many feathers you got to put in certain rows and lines. It's just it's hard to work on.
No,
they're nice and they're done. So,
you know, it's funny because you bring that up, because when I would talk to somebody about doing a turkey, they said it's the most tedious bird to do, because you have to like almost like roll and tuck these feathers, especially if they're puffed up in a stance where they're strutting.
And
it's
very
just,
true.
It's I can't imagine. I don't think I have the patience for anything like that.
Yeah, you have a lot of patience in taxidermy, because if things don't go right, you've got to step back and make them right, or whatever you have to do. But yes, you a lot of patience with this job.
Now, going backwards to fish a little bit, those are skinned out. After you skin the fish out, how are you managing that the skin of those fish?
Well, basically, I put them in a preservative or I fish tan is what you do at that point. And obviously, then you order your form or make a form yourself to put the skin on. And at that point, basically, they're glued on there and stapled on the back. And then you prep them. But they usually have to dry for a good month and a half or more. Fish has to dry a long time before you can actually prep them and paint them.
Really?
Yep.
Man, see, this is why we have you on the show, is because all this stuff I never would have imagined. You know, we take it in, we look through the magazine as to the pose we want. You know, to me, it's like yesterday with the elk. It was, okay, this is how I saw it. It turned its head. That's how I want to remember it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Now,
that's what's nice modern taxidermy. Pretty much the sky's the limit. Anything's possible.
No, I've seen lots of cool works. You know, when we go to the Grand Rapids show, for the Ultimate Sports Show in Grand Rapids, there's always some great examples of taxidermy. Now, right. Let's move forward. October 1st is coming. We have bow season. And in conversation with you this week when I was at your studio, you said that the early fall deer to you is not only a better looking, but the coat is very different, and it makes for a very different looking mount.
It does. The hair is so much shorter. The skin's a little thinner. But in general, any deer from, I would say, October 20th, maybe October 15th, and earlier, early season, there's so much prettier, I think, because you have all the muscle, the veins, just the short hair. This looks really, really pretty. And I still love the rest of the deer the rest of the year, but once you get the longer hair, it doesn't show off the detail as much.
Speaking with Mark Ash from Wildlife Reflection Taxidermy, our website is wildmichiganradio.com. Pick up the podcasts or visit our sponsors there as well. Mark, now, this is you know, every show, there's something I'm sure I make somebody mad about, which is fine. But the over-exaggeration of neck size on a white-tailed deer, why?
Yeah, a lot of people have that idea. I try to measure mine. If it's an extra neck on the deer, when they come in, measure that ahead of time. But in general, I don't know if too many taxidermists that for some reason would do any different than the natural deer. I'm not really sure why. But yeah, some people are crazy about just the neck size. Not even the antlers, but the neck size.
Yeah, look, I understand why the neck gets that way and how it gets that way and the usefulness of it during the rut, right, during that fighting season. But to me, look, it's kind of a purist thing for me. I want my animal to be remembered as it was taken,
right,
I guess, and not an over-exaggeration. Again, it's a preference thing. But but as a taxidermist, I just kind of wondered, you know, do you see a lot of that where people want an exaggeration of the mount?
I do. I do at times. I've got guys that want me to stretch them more than I can stretch it. In general, when they come back from the tannery, they're very stretchy anyways. You have no problem getting the maximum out of that cape. But some guys, they want it even, you know, make it bigger somehow or add some points or whatever to the deer. And go, wow, you really want to do that? But it's, you know, it's to each his own, I guess, on that part.
It is what the customer wants. Now, real quickly, yes. Got about a minute left in this segment. What about, let's say, Grandpa's mount? It's been around for a while. It's looking kind of rough. Is there things that can be done to fix that?
Yes, I can actually, you know, fix up on all if I need to make it look better, glue some things, re-epoxy it, repaint it. Quite a few people, too, will say just remount it. So what I'll do at that point, I'll take the antlers off the old mount and get a brand new form and a brand new skin, so now you have a brand new mount that will last forever. So, I mean, it's up to the person's choice, but do quite a bit of that, of remounting old deer.
Excellent stuff. Wildlife Reflection Taxidermy, look him up online. Give me your website again, will you, Mark?
WildlifeReflection.com.
All right, check him out. You can find him on our Facebook, find him on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and wildlifereflection.com. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Mark Ash, thanks everybody for joining us here on this hour of the show. Whole another hour coming your way. And if you missed any of it, hit us up on the podcast, wildmichiganradio.com, brought to you by Lucky Buck, MUCC, Costa, and HHA Sports on the Michigan Talk Network.